Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneurs podcast show. My name is Josh. I'm an Orlando entrepreneur, and I travel around having conversations with founders, investors, and just incredible people who build and support the Orlando entrepreneurial ecosystem here. And today I'm having a conversation with my friend Rudy Ellis, who's the CEO and founder of Switchboard Live. And we're here in his office in downtown Orlando, really exciting, really cool office. And we're here to hear his story. So ladies and gentlemen, welcome Rudy to the show.
Josh, thanks for having me, man. This is great. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm excited too, man. So why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what is Switchboard Live?
Sure. So again, my name is Rudy Ellis, CEO of Switchboard Live. Originally born and raised in Philadelphia. Huge Eagles fan, you know, hometown hero guy. Went to school in D.C. I went to Howard University. After that, I moved out to the Bay Area. So I lived in the Bay Area for a couple of years, working for companies like EA and IDOS. So I was in the gaming space, you know, years ago, right? I ended up in Florida in 1999. Now that I look back, I actually started working for a startup. You know, like I was like employee like number 30, but at the time I just thought it was a company, and I didn't understand the world of startups at all. So that kind of allowed me to kind of grow and mature from a technology standpoint and see a company go through acquisitions and, you know, people leave and hires and in my job and role expanded. So that's really, I think, the opportunity for me to learn on how to grow a company and how to build and manage teams, which then allowed me to start a company, which was Joycaster, right? So that was in the idea for Joycaster was actually August 23rd, 2013. Like, I remember that day, right? I wrote that date down because I was actually going to have a conference call with a gentleman. We were talking about, like, live video and the house of worship space and so forth. And that conference call never happened because as I was sitting on the phone, he thought I was coming to the office, but his assistant actually gave me call-in credentials. And I'm looking and I'm like, wow, there's all these cool services out there, you know, streamingservices.net, sermon.net, all focused on the house of worship space. But I'm like, but the audience is on like Justin TV and YouTube and Ustream. Wouldn't there be a great way where you can kind of combine the workflow of that? And that's when that aha moment occurred, right? Like, wait a minute, you know, this is doable. This is something I've done for a client and 4 or 5 years later, here we are, right?
Yeah. Wow. So in times where, you know, I do a bunch of conference calls and sure. these kind of interviews, and in times where people don't show up, sometimes that's the best use of time because you get 30 minutes or an hour back of your life to yep. sit there and think on things.
Exactly. And for me, then those next couple of days, my mind was like racing, like just with all the different like opportunities or different paths that this potential idea could take. And for me, it was like, okay, well, what do I need to do first, right? So that was it. Just like listing out all the things, website, domain, you know, user interface, like all these things. And I would say probably 75% of the list I didn't know how to do myself, right? And so that was a challenge, but I was ready to kind of start, you know, checking things off, if you would. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And even the next day or that next week going back to the 9 to 5, that was constantly on my mind, right?
Yeah.
It's like, And honestly, I guess it all worked out because I was at a job where, believe it or not, we were in the streaming space and the company decided to get out of it. Different focus, you know, totally understandable. And I had an opportunity to stay at that position and take a 50% pay cut and be the IT manager just because of my background, or I could leave and go to see greener pastures, you know. And so that's what I did. I said, I can go make what I was making on my own, right? I felt as though I could do that.
Yeah.
And I wasn't passionate about being an IT guy, right? So I did. So I left. You know, I left in October of that year.
That's pretty crazy. All right, so what did you go to school for?
Computer science.
Okay, so yeah. You went to school for computer science in D.C., mm-hmm. but somehow you wound up in the Bay Area. How did that happen?
Yeah, so I used to work in a – now I'm really going to nerd myself. I used to work in a computer lab, right?
Yeah.
And a guy that was an alumni, he sends an email to, like, the computer lab, like, mailing list. Hey, come out to California for the summer. Play games, right? You know, be a tester. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And so I was reading through, like, the post. And bottom line, it was for EA Sports, right? It was a Madden tester, right? So this was a thing where all you had to do was, like, write, you know, a couple bugs or things that you would change about the game. So my, like, one or two things was, like, a three-page, like, document, right? Yeah. But because I was just going on, like, bugs, things I found, things I would change, new features and everything. So I remember emailing that in, and it just so happened I was working part-time. Now I look back, another geek thing. I was working in a computer bookstore.
Yeah.
And the computer bookstore was the official...
A computer bookstore.
Yeah.
A bookstore just focused on computer stuff.
100%. Like, I'm dating myself, obviously, right? Yeah. It was just a bookstore. It was called Computer Literacy Bookshops, actually. That was the name of the bookstore.
Wow.
They had three stores. One on Apple's campus in the Bay Area. One in Tyson's Corner, Virginia, like where AOL started.
Mm-hmm.
There was another one, I think, in Vienna, Virginia. But anyway, they were the official bookstore for a conference in San Francisco. Back then, it was, like, I think, Interop World. So I wound up going out there and working, you know, spring break. Everything lined up, right? It was spring break. I worked the bookstore, you know, booth that we had there. And then the gentleman, his name was Brian, that I emailed said, hey, why don't you come, you know, visit the office? So he came and actually picked me up from, you know, San Francisco, took me down to San Mateo. And I got the tour and everything, and I was just, like, amazed. And they offered me the internship right there. It was like, hey, man, you did a great job. We'd love to have you out here. And so I went, you know, I went that summer, and it was like one of the best experiences I ever could have. You know, it was six of us living in a two-bedroom apartment, playing yeah. games all day, and then coming home and playing more games, right? You know, but yeah, that was a great time, and they actually offered me a job at the end of the summer.
Really?
And I said no, I'm gonna go back to school, and so I went back to school, but honestly, that was always in the back of my head. Like, did I pass up on my dream job? Because that was, I mean, if you think
playing about video games,
playing
video games, boys.
Yes, that was literally my dream job. And so they called me back up, said, hey, we have this new product coming out. It's happening in the spring of whatever year this was. I don't even remember at the top of my head. In the spring, we'd love for you to be the lead on this game. Are you down? Are you ready to come? And I said, let me get back to you. So I called my dad and we talked through it. He's like, hey, it's up to you. I mean, if you think this is a dream job, something you want to do, it's your call. So I made the decision. I packed up my Dodge Neon. I had to, like, leave school early because it was something, you know, I was in the spring
yeah.
semester. And we drove cross country.
Yeah, that's a long drive, man.
We stopped at the Grand Canyon. It was awesome, right? We did all that. And so, yeah, you know, I led that test team. And this was for college football, like the first version of college football for mm-hmm. PlayStation.
Fun.
Yeah, it was amazing. So anyway, that's how I was in California. And then from there, I went to another gaming company for another year. Then I went to another technology company for a couple months. And then how I got to Florida, right? So
yeah.
At the time, EA had production and development in two different sections.
Yeah.
So development was done in Florida, Maitland, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And the design and everything was in production was done in San Francisco, California area, rather. And so they decided to move everything down here. And the guy that originally hired me said, hey, you know that job that you came out for? So here's an opportunity to come back to the East Coast. And so I did it again. So then I drove back to Florida. And so, yeah, and I was down at EA here for about, for 2 years. Yeah. And so, and then, you know, frankly, I got a little bored because it's the same game and it's the same cycle each year. It's all these features. It's the rush. It's working crazy amount of hours. And then you get like a week off and then you do it again. Right. And so to me, I wasn't really being challenged.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So in terms of internships, like, what advice do you have for students out there who are looking to find their dream job? And, you know, what should they look for in terms of an internship? What should they bring to the table? What should they look for? What should they ask? What should they get?
Well, for me, it was definitely something that I think it's probably two ways of going about it. One was obviously something you're passionate about, right? I mean, if you're going to, if you want to have an opportunity to test out potential, you know, job or careers, you know, what that's a great way to do that, right? Leverage that time period as, you know, as a student to be able to go in and kind of, you know, test out, you know, hey, if this is something that I want to either gain experience that I don't have experience in, right, or an opportunity to really maybe vet out a thought or a career path. I think that would be a, you know, a fantastic way to do that. You know, now that I look back, you know, that's essentially what I did, right? It's I never was a tester before. I mean, yeah, I played games, but you know, there's actually, you know, software development lifecycle that we learned, you know, bug reporting and writing and management and managing a team. And I was, you know, it's like all of these attributes came and characteristics and skill sets were learned from doing that. So it was a great way for me to understand that. And in fact, the job that I was hired for after leaving EA down here, that's what they hired me for, to manage a QA team. Because of just the amount of, you know, testing and coding and bug reporting that came from that. So that, you know, so if you think about it, that was a great way for me to get it in. And then lastly, I think those are probably the two things. Just the ability to test out a career path or learn something new, right? 100%.
Now, do you think internships could be helpful to maybe people later stage of life where maybe they retired or maybe they got fired or something like that and they're kind of exploring new things? Do you think internships could be helpful to other
people? That's a great idea. Heck yeah. I mean, if you look at kind of like traditional VCs, right, they'll have like an entrepreneur in residence,
yeah,
right?
EIR.
So EIR. So someone that's been there, done that a couple of times, but kind of in that transition period, right? And so I think that's a fantastic idea where, you know, maybe you're, you know, either you're looking to move into something new, you have some skill sets, and, you know, why not go and do two things? One, you're helping another company, right?
Yeah.
And then two, you're learning and providing intangibles that you probably wouldn't get otherwise by, you know, reading a book or listening to a podcast.
Right. Guys, ladies and gentlemen listening into this podcast, you could get everything you need from listening into this show, but nothing is like real hand experience, right?
Exactly.
Dive in, man.
You know, get your feet wet and learn, you know, from, you know, putting out fires, right?
Sure, absolutely. So, okay, so you moved back to Florida. Now talk to us. I see a wedding ring. Are you married, man?
I am.
Do you have family?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Talk to us about, like, the world of, you know, so you have a job.
Yep.
Right? And now you see something coming. And you step out on your own to start up your own business.
Yeah.
What is that like in the world of like leaving a job to build something and then having a family and juggling all these things?
Now that I look back, was that like a smart decision? Probably not,
yeah,
to be honest with you. But I mean, you know, I'm glad I did it, of course, right? And my situation was actually, you know, really, really interesting, right? So yeah, I have two kids. I probably should have mentally prepared at the time, right, so I can know their ages. But at the time, my kids weren't in state. They were actually in the Maryland area, right? And I was in Florida with this idea, and I was with, you know, my now wife. She was my, you know, fiance, girlfriend at the time. And we were here, you know, helping to raise her kids, and I was doing a lot of commuting. You know, summers the kids were here, back and forth. And the great thing about having, you know, the job I was at, you know, from a salary standpoint, I could afford to do that. Now here I am in a position where I'm going to take a step out, right? So now there is no, you know, weekly paycheck coming in. I have savings, I have 401k, I have all of that, right? And so, and then there was severance, right? There was some severance that I was able to do. It's part of my deal, you know, joining this new company. And I still did it. It's like, you know what? I believe I can, A, I can consult and do certain things, you know, to at least make ends meet. B, you know, still be able to, you know, provide and for the kids and so forth and go see them. But yeah, it did have an impact, right? I couldn't, you know, I had to really, really strategically, you know, budget out every dollar and cents.
Yeah.
And then at the time, obviously my girlfriend, she helped out and I said, hey, this is something that I'm super passionate about, I want to do, and she understood that, and she's like, okay, well, we'll figure it out, and so thank you for her, Marsha, for, you know, making that happen.
Shout out to Marsha.
Yeah.
Yeah, who else did you seek advice from? during that time where you're like thinking about, you know, starting up your own? Like who did you call and say, hey, man, give me some advice, give me some wisdom?
That's a great question. Obviously, you know, I was talking to my dad. You know, he's always been, you know, that first person I go to, you know, just with anything, right?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think, because this was new to me, right? This, you know, even the scene. So if you think this was in, the idea for this, like I said, was in 2013. I knew that there was a ton of things that I just didn't have experience with, right? So that list that I built, it just so happened that I think now it's coming back to me. There was a startup weekend, right?
Yeah.
There was a startup weekend right before Thanksgiving. So timeline. So August was the idea. I left the company in October. Startup weekend was in that November.
Perfect timing,
right? So as I started reading, because that's what I was doing. I was in this kind of information gathering phase, right? Going out and trying to figure out the stuff that I just didn't know. And pitch, right? That was like the first thing. All right, so you need to be able to articulate this product, what it's going to do, and build a team, right? So that was what I was working on. Startup weekend, perfect opportunity, right? To go out and, you know, articulate this concept. I keep in mind, right? I'm not a developer per se, but I'm, you know, very technical and, you know, just that's been always been my background. So it's taken that transition from a cool, you know, workflow from a technical perspective, but then explaining it to people that have no idea, right?
Yeah.
So that weekend, at Startup Weekend, I failed. Like, I horribly pitched the idea. This was Joycaster, right?
Talk to us about the failure. Like, how bad was it?
I thought it was great. I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, I prepared for weeks. I actually go back and I look like, I remember in the mirror, right, videotaping myself and talking and saying, because I was preparing myself.
Yeah.
And had the cadence down and everything, because I never really had to do this other than presentations and so forth. But I go up there and I'm in line and everyone's throwing their, you know, taking their opportunity to go up there and pitch. And I thought it was good, but just by the number of people that were interested in, you know, joining the team, you know, I probably had like maybe two or three votes, right? So anyway, but what I did do though is I was really, really interested just in the environment, in the scene of being in that atmosphere. I don't know, it got to me. And so I stayed there that entire weekend. I said, I joined another team. I was a part of another team. And that 54 hours, right, from Friday to Sunday was amazing. Like, that just summed up a lot of the things that I was looking at out in the internet and trying to, you know, put together, reading blog posts, you know, from, like, Mark Suster and, you know, Hunter Brew. Like, just reading all these different things and, you know, Jason Lemkin, you know, all these kind of things, right? Reading all these things. And being able to go through that experience, and then that Sunday night after driving home, like, I'm doing this, right? That was it, right?
Yeah.
Like, I was just, it pumped me up. Like, it literally pumped me up just being a part of that. And then hearing other people talk about their experience, right? One thing that I neglected to talk about is the building that I was working in. This was the GAI building right there, mm-hmm. right? We were on the fifth floor. And so Starter Studio and Code School was on the sixth floor, right, at the time. And I used to go up there for, like, lunch and learns during lunch. And just – I was just interested, right? I was – I guess that's the type of person I am. And so I would go up there, and one time there was, you know, a topic. And this is when I first met Rich LaCursey of Benvelo. He was doing a topic on fundraise. And so it was a great lunch and learn. I'm just listening to everything. And I remember he was just the brutal honesty about – you know, your product and so forth. So for me, it was that, now that I look back, those were probably key things. When you said, who did I go for advice? Just from the, it just kind of worked out, right? That was part of it. Like, these were opportunities for me to go and learn and ask questions. And I even went to him afterwards and said, hey, I have this idea. I have no idea of how to start. And he said, hey, I'm going to send you a document. If you can answer these questions, that's a great start. And it was just all about, like, helping to build a deck. Like, it was these, you know, important questions to kind of help build a pitch deck, right? And some of the things that you should know before you even start a business, right, from that standpoint. And so now, you know, going to Startup Weekend and pitching that and having that as a, you know, as a baseline, and then learning that there was I started studio class, and that was coming up. And so that was in, I think, in May. And so, yeah, I applied for that. And then in the meantime, I was looking to recruit folks, right? Because I knew there was things that I just, there was no way I could build, right? And so that's where, you know, just talking to people that I worked with in the past, right? That was the best thing. Like, hey, I had this idea. Who can help me? Let me go to people that I know, you know, has a great caliber of work ethic and, you know, is really smart people. And so, yeah, that's what started. So it was a lot of coffees, a lot of Panera Breads,
yeah.
You know, a lot of work, going to people on their lunch hour and just chatting with them about this idea and just seeing if they were interested.
Yeah. How many lunch meetings did you have? Because, you know, you had this idea. You started having conversations around funding.
Mm-hmm.
You had a job.
Mm-hmm.
But you started going around saying, if I do this, I built out this huge list. I don't know how to do 75% of it. I need help.
Yep.
So you started to go and talk with people. How many people did you, like, talk with, you think?
So in person, there's probably a couple guys that, you know, just from my career that I've talked to.
Sure.
One guy, he was, you know, he was super, like, he was interested, but I could tell he didn't want to take the leap, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, hey, it could be nights and weekends, right? This could be, you know, your hustle, right? You know, something to give you opportunity. Online, I went to, like, co-founder dating. I went to Co-Founders Lab, I think it was called.
Yeah.
I did online. I was talking to a guy in Canada for a couple months. Like, it was another gentleman I met here in Orlando, just reaching out in different blogs. So I was everywhere, right? It was just trying to, A, find people that were interested, and B, what I realized, no one is going to be as passionate about it than I am,
tell
right?
Me about it, yeah.
So to me, it's like, dude, this is like the best thing since sliced bread. Like, why would you not want to be a part of that?
Yeah.
But that wasn't happening. It's you know, until I met Josh, right? Well, not met Josh, but so Josh was one of the original co-founders. And, you know, I explained to him, really just saying, hey, Josh, look, do you know anyone that can help with this? Like, I went to him just in that kind of, you know, conversation. Like, I wasn't even asking him. And about 2 weeks later, he came back and said, hey, you know what? This is actually interesting. It checks a couple boxes for me. I'd love to learn more. And so then that's when it started focusing, started coming on him, right? Because during this time, I was teaching myself, like, Ruby on Rails.
Yeah.
I was out there trying to build a front end because I knew these were things that, you know, I was going to have, like a user management system, a website, a proof of concept, you know, that was, you know, a heck of a lot easier than the rudimentary thing that I built. So I did have a kind of a working model that did work actually for a client for a whole year, right? So I had that, you know, minimum viable product.
And you were getting paid for it.
Yep, got paid for it, right? So that was there. It's like, now I need an interface that other folks can build. And that's where my skill set was like, right? I didn't have that, right? But for him, so let's say December to probably about like April or so, it was just kind of like a courtship, really. We were just meet and talk and think about ideas. And so for him, yeah, he said it checked a couple boxes and he was, you know, really interested. And that's when I, right at the time when I went right into to start a studio, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he was able to do some things on his side to make it easy for him to work, you know, with the company he was working with. And so, you know, at the end of Starter Studio, which was, I think, in August of 2014. So that was just another, again, if you look back from a milestone perspective, that was just another, you know, thing that I could not imagine. But, you know, being at the Cheyenne, you know, downtown, it was like 400 people and coming out of stage and looking up like, oh my goodness.
Intense, yeah.
Very intense, right? But I wouldn't, you know, trade it for the world. It was nerve-wracking walking on that stage, to be honest. But I needed to do that, right? I needed to have that experience. So it was amazing.
What advice do you have for people out there who have an idea? Maybe they have a minimal viable product and they're getting a little bit of traction. They go, I need a team. They built out the list and they go, holy moly, I got a lot of gaps. I need to find a co-founder. I need to find my first team, right? Which means that, you know, maybe I don't have a lot of money to pay them in
sure.
salary or something like that. I need a team. What steps would you recommend to those out there hunting for their first team members?
I would say, so if a person has the notion or idea that, you know, they are a budding entrepreneur, you should be networking, you know, prior to that, right? It's you know, it's going to just make your life easier, right? So whatever, whether it's marketing or sales or, you know, technology, you know, there's meetups, there's groups that, you know, you as a person, you should be a part of, right? And that helps just to kind of, you know, foster this community and provide, you know, valuable feedback. And then again, if you're working on, you know, 9 to 5 is a great way to bring and understand what's going on in the startup scene to traditional businesses. And that's, I think, a huge disconnect. So I would say, you know, and I would say there's a little bit of that. So me going to those lunch and learns, me, you know, meeting other folks, it was a great way to start the networking process. I think if you can do that now in the proactive stage, so that when you do need to go back, you have at least, you're starting to build that network, right? There are resources, there are people that you can go back and rely on versus trying to start from scratch. I think that's where, you know, it could be, you know, extremely, extremely challenging. And that's one of the things that I'm always doing. You know, once a week, I'm trying to have a coffee or a meeting with somebody that I haven't, you know, haven't had an interaction with before, because you never know from who they know or who they're able to put to contact with, or how you're able to help them, right? And that's the only way you're going to kind of continue to build that network. You can't sit in the office all the time. You can't, you know, be in a glass cube, you know, every day and just expect something to happen, you know, magically, right? I mean, sure, there may be those silver bullets that do happen, but I would say if you can do something and you know that there's an opportunity, start now, building that network.
Start building relationships.
Start building that relationship and network now.
Right on. So fast forward, you know, here we are. We're in Orlando. You guys are going into your fourth year of business. Mm-hmm. You guys had a pivot from Joycaster, which was really focused on house of worship. And you guys had a little bit of a pivot where now it's Switchboard Live.
Correct.
Talk to us about, you know, maybe some milestones, and then talk to us about the pivot in the business.
Yeah, so actually Joycaster, so even though that first use case was a house of worship, we realized it was really a B2C product. So it was anybody. So you think about Twitch and you think about YouTube gaming, and there was a proliferation of all these different gaming platforms. And so that was our focus, right? It's consumers that want to stream through the platforms. But what we were also seeing a lot of traction were events, right? So right out of Starter Studio, that was August, September of 2014, I was in Beverly Hills at an event called the Streamy Awards Show, right? It was like, you know, a production produced by Dick Clark Productions with a company called Tube Filter. So real quick, imagine the Golden Globes for YouTubers and influencers, right? This awesome. This is their event, the Streamies, right? And so our product was used to stream to 10 different YouTube channels, their MySpace page, it was a Snappy TV, it was just 15 destinations, right? And so after that, that's when we realized that this may be another, you know, vertical, right, where production companies are providing a technology resource that will allow video to go to all these different destinations, right? And so for us, we kind of, we were chasing, you know, dollars, to be honest with you, right? So these were things that would help us to kind of move and help with the development, because we didn't have everything baked out then. It was really, everything was back end, and we had a small interface for the front end, right? We didn't have that for a couple more months after that. But anyway, the pivot or the change was when we went through Techstars. So we went through Techstars in November of 2015. And one of the things that they challenged us with is, you know, who is your market? Who are you focusing on? Is it B2C or is it B2B? And at the time, you know, as a startup, you think you can do it all, right? You believe that, I can remember me saying it's the same market. It's because from a workflow, it's the exact same technology. You have video, you have a platform, you send it out. So whether you are a gamer, Johnny Gamer playing, you know, some game on their PC, or a company like Dick Clark, it's the same thing. But the challenge is it's a different sales cycle, it's a different sales strategy, it's a different marketing campaign. They're all the elements from a business standpoint is totally different, right? And that's what we weren't understanding, you know, and that's what we kind of learned going through that. So anyway, it logically made sense to focus on businesses, you know, enterprise, because A, they're, you know, a higher, you know, contract value, and B, as a team, it was four of us at the time, we just did not have the skill set to really go and build a true consumer-based SaaS product, right? None of us has ever done that. And part of that would have taken a ton more money, right? Just to market and grow that business. So we focused on that. And so part of that was from a branding perspective. You know, Joycaster, you know, if I say that, you still don't know what that is, right? You know, I understand that there definitely is a meaning behind it. You know, my daughter's middle name is Joy. And you're casting whatever your joy is, right? So that was the thought behind it, right? Whatever your content is, you're casting your joy. And that's where the J-O-Y is a different, you know, play on just the naming element. And so she was super sad when I told her I'm changing the name of the company.
Did you change her middle name to Switchboard to fit the...
I probably should do that. Like, hey, yeah. Kayla, you know, it's time to change your middle name to make it same. But no, and so when we came out of that, we wanted to make sure that from a branding perspective, you know, everything was really focused in that. And so that's where Switchboard Live came about. So if you think about it, we're plugging you into all these different networks. We're doing it for live. It helps with the story. Yeah. It's much, much easier to articulate.
People get it.
People get it. They get it, exactly. Whereas Joycaster, you got to explain what that is and then, you know. So,
sure.
Yeah, but yeah.
So essentially what you guys could do is you guys go to, your technology goes to an event and they can film it with one camera and then they could take that live and then spit it out into many different channels.
Exactly.
YouTube, Facebook, where else?
Periscope, Twitch, Twitter, their website, Apple TV, you know, Roku channel. So, and really what we found is the people that now, so we fast forward to 2018, it's the marketing team, it's the digital content teams, it's the social media teams. They are approaching this as, with the assumption that, hey, our audience exists on these platforms. They're looking for our content on these platforms. We need to make sure that our content is there. Mm-hmm. 2013, I guarantee you that was not the case. I mean, I would be out there explaining the awesomeness of this product, and I would get, well, why would I want to do that? What's the point of doing that? Right. And it was, you know, honestly, that was a challenge because from my experience, we were solving a technical workflow that was really a tool. Right. It's really a tool. I mean, it's video in, video out. Right.
Yeah.
But what I realized, the power of what we were building and we're still working down this path. This is our North Star. It's really the data. Right. It's the data around how many people are watching, how long they're watching, the channels they're going to, right? And we're just building the infrastructure that allows content to get to these destinations. And when the cherry on top was when we looked at the analytics of that Dick Clark event, to go back to 2014, they spent marketing dollars from their social media team, you know, marketing team to say, hey, watch this event on streamies.org. It was a branded like web player on their website. They're driving all the traffic there. Sunday night, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock Pacific Coast time, right? And they yielded about 70,000 to 80,000 viewers, right?
Wow.
For that period, they were using our product in parallel as well, going to 10 different YouTube channels, their MySpace page, and so forth. No marketing initiative. It was just by using their platforms. 486,000 people viewed it.
Wow.
And so that was like, wait a minute. You know, that was the power of being able to leverage these other distribution. Those channels had viewers and subscribers that when they went live, they were alerted. And so that's when it's like, wait a minute. Like, that's the second kind of like, aha. And that's what we're finding is really valuable. It's great for me. A simplification of a workflow, but the real power is being able to tap into those audiences that exist.
Wow. So, like, I've heard you mention during this conversation, focus, right? I've heard that like 7 times, you know, like, and it's so powerful. What advice do you have? And I'm asking a lot of advice because, you know, that's the purpose of the
sure.
show, right?
Yeah.
You know, what advice do you have? You know, do you have like one or two pieces of advice for entrepreneurs out there to get focused? Because you mentioned, especially in sales, right? If you're selling to everyone, it's very hard to learn the sales cycle of everyone. But when you niche down and when you focus, you could create a process,
correct,
a system, right?
Yep.
Give us advice on focus in terms of sales and marketing.
I say that's something, honestly, we're still struggling with, right?
Yeah.
But what I've done, and this is actually as of this quarter, right? So this is Q4 of this year. We have, you know, some internal sales initiatives, some internal sales goal. And what I do right now as a team, what we're even doing is, do these items have a direct impact for our Q4 goal? If not, don't do it. Like, literally, that's like what we had to come down to it, because we would have these Trello boards, all these things we want to do. Like, there was a conference that I wanted to go to actually this week. Does it have a direct impact on moving the needle for this quarter? No, I'm not doing it, because I want to succeed and focus on this goal for this quarter. And so that's hard. That is extremely hard, because there's things that, yes, I and we want to do, but it's not the right decision right now. And that's why I say we're still struggling with that. And that's I would say, learn how to say no, and learn how to have, you know, one or two big rocks that you need to achieve for a set period of time, and challenge every decision, or challenge new feature, or challenge a new initiative, and make sure that it has a direct impact on that. And then the second thing is, if you can put some type of KPIs, right, something in place that you can measure, you know, that you are successfully meeting those goals. I think that's another thing, right? And we actually learned that through TechStars, right?
Yeah, TechStars is great about
doing TechStars that. Will do that.
They'll, OKRs and KPIs.
Exactly, and it's a weekly thing. And so we lost sight of that for a little bit, and we're 100% bringing that back in. And we're doing like our weekly all hands, where it's like, what are your big rocks for this week? What did you do last week? Roadblocks, what are you doing this week, right? And so you just have to, you know, like you said, focus. You have to weed out the things that aren't going to have a direct impact and move the needle, because that's what matters, right? You want to be able to have a story to say, hey, I was able to go from here to here, or achieve this and that, or implement this and that in this time period. Imagine if I had $1 million or $10 million and I knew that it cost X, right? You want to have that equation mapped out. And to get there, you have to be able to focus and challenge yourself.
Once you got that focus, you know, I'm reading about you guys on AngelList, on Crunchbase, and you guys are having some good growth, and you guys have gone after some funding.
Correct.
Could you talk to us about, you know, maybe where you guys are at in terms of your fundraising, or the things that you've accomplished? As of today, it's October, you know, 2018. Like, you went after some money. Could you talk to us about
that? Yeah, sure. So that was another learning exercise, right?
Yeah.
So let me think back. So we, right before TechStars, right? So again, relationships. So that very, very, very first conversation with Richard LaCursey of Invelo, you know, back when I was actually still working another gig, right? That was a fruitful conversation, because, you know, they're an investor now. You know, they've invested in two rounds with us, right? And that just shows you, if I didn't go to that lunch and learn, I probably wouldn't have met him. I wouldn't have had that conversation, and, you know, wouldn't have started that relationship. Because at the time, I wasn't even asking for money, because I didn't know that I needed money, nor did I know what I was building, right? But it was, again, he was a resource, and he had the knowledge. And then that from there, there's been, you know, a lot of instrumental folks that have helped along the way, you know, through the different programs. You know, from Startup Studio to Venture Scale Up, you know, with Dennis and that team. And going through that was, you know, another stepping stone that allowed us to prepare to go into start to TechStars, right? So
Yep. We're
kind of like accelerator junkies, I guess, if you look at it. But this goes back to like my whole overarching thing is, you know, being able to leverage the resources to learn the things that I didn't know, right? To get me to that next level. And that's what I'm a big proponent of. And then obviously, coming out of that, that helped us prepare for fundraising. So right before TechStars, we did, you know, like financial modeling, you know, with different folks there through the program. I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah.
You're drawing a blank right now. But anyway, we went through the financial modeling, and it helped us prepare for, you know, the pitch that we needed to go out there and talk to a potential investor. So we were able to raise a small angel round in 2015, right before TechStars. Venvelo participated. The Idea Fund Partners participated.
About how much did you raise in that first kind of angel round?
So all in, right, it's going to be a weird number because TechStars was actually part of that as well. That was $423,000, right? So it was convertible note, and I think 18K of that was equity. That was part of the program.
Okay.
Right? So that was 2015.
18K in equity.
And then 405
convertible notes. Could you explain maybe the differences, and for those listening in, the difference between like a convertible note and
yeah. So basically, think of a convertible note like a loan, essentially, right?
That's scary. I mean,
that's really what it is. It was a 2-year loan, right? That had an interest rate on an annual basis. So meaning it's basically it's debt, right? It's a loan, it's debt, what have you, and they say that, hey, we're going to give you X amount of dollars. So it was actually two notes, right? One through TechStars and one through the group. We're going to give you X amount of dollars for this period of time with this interest rate. And at the time of your next qualifying, you know, liquidating event or capital raise, that 405 plus interest will convert and we will buy into the company at whatever, you know, dollar amount from a valuation standpoint that's going to be there for a share. And so when we raised our second round, which is our seed round, those investors' dollars then converted into equity. And so they bought shares, right, into the company, plus interest, right? And then from an equity standpoint, TechStars always have this approach that they are a co-founder, right? And so which is really cool because they instead of traditional investors who are buying preferred shares, right? So I'll let you guys, I'll let you talk about that in the podcast because it will probably take up a lot of time. So they have preferred shares,
yeah.
But TechStars buys actually a common shares, right? So they are, you know, just like a co-founder. Just like anyone, co-founder or any other folk earning, you know, option. And so being a part of the program, that 6% is what, you know, they get at that early stage because they believe in the company and
yep.
being a part of the network, which has been truly amazing. And so that was the 423. So it was 18K. I think it's 20K now.
Yeah.
It went up a bit. YC, 500, they all do that, right? There's that percentage that they're going to get to be a part of your team.
So that was your angel round.
That was our angel round.
And then you went for your seed.
Correct, seed round.
How much did you go for in the seed? Because this was your kind of the second round.
Yeah, right? So we closed on that in November 2017.
Okay.
So 2 years later, right? Yep. So if you do the math, right?
Yeah.
That 423, I mean, we had to make that last for 2 years. And then obviously there was revenue that we were able to glean from different events. And that was our seed round was 1.5.
Okay.
So, and we had some fantastic investors in that. So New World Angels was our lead investor. Great team, great guys. Mosley Ventures out of Atlanta. They were they basically participated again. Venvelo, and then we had a number of angel investors as well through like Florida Angel Nexus, you know, a couple of, you know, angel investors through that. Ben Franklin Tech Partners out of Pennsylvania participated. So it's a cool, right? It's a cool group of people that I think can help us, you know, get to that next level. But that's a year ago,
yeah.
Right? It feels like that was short time ago. But, you know, the one thing I will say, so from a learning exercise, is if you're going to do any fundraising, I don't know how your team is structured, it's a 95%, you know, focus. You think you can do both fundraising and run the company, but it has to be a strategic, tactical approach. Like, hey, we're gonna raise X. It's gonna take us 3 months to at least get to that point, and be prepared to focus 3 to 6 months of your time on preparing and also executing on that. So that's, for me, that's what it was.
So fundraising was a full-time job.
It was a full-time job. And I was naive, even though people told me you need to be, you know, 100% focused, and you'll read this, but it's tough. It truly is tough. And have thick skin as well, right?
Yeah.
Because you will hear a lot of no's. A lot of no's.
Yeah.
I wish I kept track of how many no's. I probably could go back and look, but... A lot of no's.
And not only a lot of no's, but you're getting asked by some of the smartest people who have built companies, sold companies.
Right.
So these are some sharp individuals sitting across from the table. They see your plan, and they poke holes in it.
Do they? I mean, and what I learned is, you know, your pitch will mature. It will get better. You'll be better prepared. So that first guy to that you know, 10th person is going to be a heck of a lot. It should be. It better be. You need to learn between those different pitches, and you're absolutely right, because you're better prepared. You're anticipating some of the questions. And there's things you can do to prepare yourself, right? You know, yeah. Just some of the standard questions. You should know how much it costs to acquire a customer. You should know how much runway. Hey, if I, like the famous question, if I gave you $1 million, what are you going to do tomorrow, right? It's like, right? You need to have that plan. Yeah. You need to have potential hires keyed up or in the queue, you know? Like being able to have that just shows that really you as a CEO or you as a founding team, you've thought through this. You may not have all the answers, nor you may not even have done or executed, but the fact that you've thought through the process and you have a plan and you're going to stick with it, that's what they want to hear, because I think that's what I actually learned, you know, by going through that. You know, it's not – everyone has an idea. It's about the execution of that idea and knowing that you have a plan, and it may or may not work. They understand that. That's part of, you know, investing, you know, but when it does work, it's a great thing for both. It's a win-win.
Yeah. How many have you gone for other rounds? How much have you raised total?
No, so this is it. So we I guess that would be a little under 2 million, right?
In total.
But I do think, well, I do know that there will be another raise, right?
Yeah.
So we're probably going to get back on the horse for 2019, mm-hmm. starting up. And primarily is just because of this year. So another lesson learned, right? When you're developing, keep it simple. Yes, you want to architect for the future, but you know, baby steps, right? We probably lost, you know, frankly, a good 6 to 8 months from a development standpoint, right? And part of that was we were planning for the future. We were thinking about scalability things, right? Trying to, you know, do some best practices, and we probably lost sight of the benefit of being a startup is that, you know, rapid, you know, iterative development cycle, getting things out there, testing it and changing, where we took a step back and said, hey, this is where we want to be. So anyway, that pushed our product, you know, being pushed out further, and so that impacted us getting to market, that impacted us being able to have conversations with folks. So anyway, you know, for us, now we're past all of that a little later than we want it to be. We have, you know, a process where someone comes in and we're setting up those KPIs, right? We have X amount of viewers coming to our site. They enter in a 20-minute demo. Then they have a 14-day trial. Then they convert to a real. So we can see those stepping stones and say, hey, if we get 10,000 people come to our site or 1,000 people sign up and they're converting an X and it costs us, you know, X amount of dollars to acquire that customer, you can do the math and figure out what $2-4 million buys you and how long that gets you there, right? And so now, yes, that's part of the plan. I mean, it took a little bit longer to get there, but that's part of it. It's, I think for us, it will be kind of like a just purely growth focus, right? Growth focus, you know, raise is what we need to do.
Right on. So for the people listening in on the audience, so we could help support and love you and lift you up.
Sure.
What kind of customers are you looking to serve, and what can you do for them? Like, who do you want to talk to at what kind of company? Like, so that we could help set up introductions.
No, I appreciate
for you.
It. Yeah. So so we have kind of like a variety of customers, right?
Yeah.
So from, you know, an individual, that's someone, you know, like you, right?
Yep.
You're an individual, you have your business, and maybe you now want to add a video element to your weekly show, right? You're ready to make that jump, right? So that's something where that may make sense for you. But then we also have some NFL teams, we have some brands, right? So those are, that's our core focus. It's probably, you know, those businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, they are augmenting their current live stream initiatives with the ability for our platform to increase their audience and engagement. And then obviously there's going to be enterprise plays, right? So we're talking in some fantastic proof shots. We're talking to some fantastic companies like Fox 29, where they're using our product to distribute out. So there's, you know, you have the different levels, and I would say our core focus is that, you know, that business tier, right? And then we understand that there's going to be drop off from there. So so that's, I would say, anyone that's doing live now that has an understanding about live, that's really looking to leverage their network as well as partners, right? So think about if you know, like the Dolphins, for example. The Miami Dolphins is a client.
Yeah, go Fins, by the way.
Go Fins? Okay. Well, we have the Eagles as well, so okay. Go Eagles. Yeah, right. But anyway, like what they've done is they have a show where they leverage Mercedes-Benz as a sponsor, right? And so not only are they streaming to, you know, the Dolphins, but they can potentially now stream to Mercedes-Benz's Facebook page or put a lower third watermark on there. So those are the things that we enable for those types of customers that that get it, right? And they're looking to kind of, you know, take their streaming to that next level.
Right on. So those listening in the audience, if you know professional football teams or professional teams, and you can make an introduction.
Small businesses, you know, brands that are looking to provide, you know, live content to their channels. Sports teams, colleges, athletic universities, these are all within the wheelhouse, you know, for us as well.
Awesome. So let's together as a community lift up our guests here that are on the show and our local entrepreneurs here. Rudy, man, this has been a really great conversation. What questions should I ask you that I didn't, that I totally dropped the ball, that I'd be like, man, I should have asked you this?
That's a great question. I guess what keeps me up at night, maybe?
Hey, what keeps you up at night?
That's a great question.
Thanks, man. I just thought of that.
I think for me, it goes back to that, the things that I still don't know, right? It's always, you know, are we doing the right things now that are having an impact on the company, and what is happening or what could potentially happen that I just don't know about, right? It really is the things that, you know, that I'm concerned with. You know, folks, you know, leaving the company, or how are we going to replace that, or or you know new hires, or bringing, you know, or transitioning our sales team. So it's things that we haven't done, and the things that you know, we haven't prepared or we haven't went through, right? And so those are the things, honestly, that keep me up. And we should, you know, or at least for me, it should, because those are the things that I have to consistently be thinking about to kind of move, you know, the direction of the company. Because, you know, as a CEO, your main thing is keeping the company funded, you know, making sure you have a great team, and the strategic goals of the company, making sure that that's articulated down. So those are the three things that every day I think about. But then that fourth thing is like, all right, what could potentially happen here, right, to make myself aware of that.
The Murphy's Law, like, what could go wrong, right?
What could go wrong? Exactly. That's really it, you know, and try to be ahead of the game as much as possible.
Right on. So people listening into the audience, if they want to learn more about you, want to connect with you, where could they go to find you, learn more about your business?
Got it. So I am on the socials, obviously on Twitter at Rudy J. Ellis, LinkedIn as well. Full name is Rudiger, but I also have Rudy Ellis in there as well. Our company is switchboard.live. Of course, that's on the socials as well, at Switchboard Live on Facebook and Instagram. And so forth. We work in, obviously, downtown Orlando, out of Industrious Orlando. You know, we'd love to get, you know, feedback. We love for folks to try out our product. We have, you know, a kind of a cool product. If you are thinking about doing live content, here's a great way to start building your audience across your socials versus picking one and then adding another. It's a great way to kind of, you know, do it all at the same time. You can sign up at cloud.switchboard.live. We have a full 20-minute demo where you can come in and literally kick the tires. You don't have to. You just add your destinations and go live and just check it out. And then if something you like, you can go into a 2-week trial and then go from there.
Right on. Right on. And we'll include these links on the show notes below. So awesome. If people are listening in, better be listening. And if you're this far, right, you know, go to the show notes, click on those links, connect directly to Rudy and his team, and learn more about the product. Rudy, man, thank you for coming on the show, sharing your passion, your joy, and just building great businesses here in Orlando and across the United States and the globe. So
thank appreciate you. It. Thanks for having me. This was fun. I love it.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, listening into the show, thank you for being a part of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We hope you've enjoyed this. Hope it brought you hope, inspiration, and education so that you guys can go build amazing things here in Orlando, Florida. Until then, we will talk with you guys on the next episode. Goodbye, everyone. We'll see you, Rudy.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.